If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome to the Baseball Insiders. I'm Adam Winder, joined, as always, by FanSided's MLB prospect guru, Eric Cole. And this is our final show on the prospect show before the MLB draft. Sunday night, night one. And if you're thinking, I know how the draft works, you're wrong. Sunday night is the first 105 picks this year, a completely normal number through rounds one through three. Then we move on to day two, and they finish this whole thing off. And we are here to talk about the players whose stock has risen since the last time we previewed the draft, those who've seen it fall, plus some wild cards who could upend everything, and how the Nationals' firing spree 1 week out of having the number one overall pick affects the landscape, plus risers and fallers from minor league action and your questions. Eric, thanks for joining me. Let's have a fun one.
Yeah, this is my favorite time of the year on the baseball calendar, honestly. I started my baseball coverage career cutting my teeth with draft coverage. And again, it's like 48 hours where I don't sleep very much, but it's also like a really great time kind of digging into from like the top guys, the top names, all the way down to the 20th rounders that no one frankly cares about and we probably won't hear from again. I enjoy all of it. So I'm looking forward to talking about draft with you.
Yeah, we will hear from some of them at some point, maybe, probably, possibly. But either way, we're going to be focusing on pretty much the top of the draft here, as well as answering any of your draft cues. And yes, the Angels' second overall pick may be in the majors by the time this podcast is finished, a full 5 days before he is even selected. But we don't know. We will find out very soon. Not quite that soon. Subscribe to the Moonshot if you have not, our weekly baseball email newsletter, where the fans at an MLB team, including Robert, Eric, myself, break down all the biggest stories in the big leagues with humor, insight, behind-the-scenes info. You can read all that and more on the Baseball Insiders feed on fansided.com. That's fansided.com/baseball-insiders. Eric has a prospect draft column up today. I have a Curtis Granderson interview and more interviews to come on the channel this week. Stay tuned. I'm talking to Bryson Stott of the Phillies. That should be up later today or tomorrow. Another fun one. And we will be boots on the ground, Robert, for the Futures game and draft. I will be at All-Star Media Day Derby game next week. So stay tuned for plenty more video, audio content, written work from the Baseball Insiders. And join us in the Discord between shows if you're not already there. Become a member. Hit that join button. We'll see you there. You can bother us between shows and talk to Robert in an exclusive Q&A Thursday afternoons at 3 o'clock Eastern. All right, let's get into the meat of it. Trending up, trending down, wild cards in the MLB draft, which begins on Sunday night. I want to talk about the good stuff first. Who are we seeing raise their stocks during the final weeks, days before the draft actually takes place? Who's got momentum at the top of the first round?
So top of the first round's tricky because basically the same 10 names have been mentioned there all spring. And I think that's still going to remain true, that they're like the same 10 names are just going to be shuffled around a little bit. It just comes down to who's going to kind of dip towards the back end and who actually has a chance to be number one overall. But I do have a few names that I think have been rising heavily. One's Gage Wood, to the surprise of pretty much no one who's followed the College World Series at all. Throwing a no-hitter in the College World Series is a good way to get yourself drafted highly. He's probably going to go mid to late first round now. He does have some concerns. He did have a shoulder injury this year, but it's first round stuff. And if he's healthy and the medicals check out, whoever gets him, even at the middle of the first round, is pretty going to be getting a steal. Another name is a prep bat, Josh Hammond. He's generally like been kind of in the kind of comp round to high second round sort of range, but there's a lot of people talking about him possibly going into the back half of the first round, even a little bit higher, like maybe in the 20s. That could be a lot of fun because he's a fun bat. And the last one's Tennessee first baseman Andrew Fisher. This is a funny one for me because this is a type of bat that the industry has kind of eschewed for a while, because like they first base bat, not really defensive valuable players, though they don't like to spend high picks on them. But at the same time, in this year's class, if you have a proven college bat who's just sitting there, those are names, position aside, that tend to rise on draft day. And so if you see one position where like, wow, that guy went a lot higher than I thought he was going to, it's going to be the college bats. And Andrew Fisher seems to be a name that's coming up a lot more in kind of those, back half of the first round type of conversations.
Yeah, we talked about Fisher in one of our earlier previews. He seemed to be connected to, again, all of the organizations that value, that seem to squeeze the most value out of these types of players. So if these players aren't being valued so much and they're ending up, you know, in the back half of the first round, maybe the back third, they're going to a win now team, and they're going to a team that sort of regularly squeezes out talented players. So if you're looking to bet on, say, investments in the sports card space, maybe a guy like Wood who has name recognition, or a guy like Fisher who's likely to be gobbled up by an org that values strong bats and seems to get the most out of them, wouldn't be the worst idea. Now, what about the draft prospects who've slumped? And this, of course, includes our inarguable preseason number one, who we're sort of watching, the familiar names. I would say Cam Cannarella fits here too, in terms of like a name a lot of people are familiar with, who's not going to go as high as maybe they would have assumed. But there's an obvious number one name who just keeps slipping, and whoever gets him is going to get the headlines of Steele's preseason potential number one pick, but not certain what that means at this juncture.
Yeah, the player there is Jace LaViolette, and for Uncle Ted saying he's still the best player in the draft, that's absolutely silly. There's too much swing and miss right now to be kind of considered a top five talent in this draft class. But I tend to agree that like this type of like skill set probably should be still being picked in the top half of the first round. There's just too much that could go right, and there's too much upside, but the risk is much higher now. And when you're taking a college bat, one of the reasons you're taking one is some amount of sure, like he will get to the big leagues, right? He will get there and he'll be on the path relatively quickly. And in LaViolette, there's a real chance that he gets the high A or double A and he just can't hit breaking stuff and he ends up just being out of the league pretty quickly. So I understand why his stock has fallen a little bit. And a lot of people are saying he might get to like the Astros, would be kind of wild to me, which is at 21. But again, I still think he should probably be in the top half of the first round somewhere, but I just don't think he's a top five talent in this particular draft class. And he's kind of proved that out. The other name it's weird is Tyler Bremner. Depending on who you talk to, he's still going to be like a top 12, top 14 pick. But there's some models that aren't liking him as much. And there's also like he wasn't particularly great at UC Santa Barbara this year. So it was kind of like there's a couple teams that maybe sour on him that were kind of really big on him. But he still has his cheerleaders in the top half of the first round. And if those teams decide to land on him, I could see him going at 10. I could see him going at 12, 14. But there's also a chance like that. If they find that there's another player they like a little bit better, those few teams that really like him in that top half, he could fall a lot further than we think.
I see the comments. I do like Anthony here, but I do have the Jaden Hill vibes a little bit. So you just got to hope he does not get selected by the Colorado Rockies. Although Hill had a good year before he got hurt, maybe a bullpen piece for the Rockies moving forward. Hey, you never know. But yeah, I wish there was I wish I could unsee the comp because I want to believe. But a lot of names and a lot of debate. And again, like you said, the top 10 has been relatively standard for a while. So we're all sort of getting used to, all right, we're just sort of moving these names around. Not a lot interrupting the process and flow. But in terms of major surprises, I mean, the Washington Nationals gutting their manager and GM, although they are handing the reins temporarily to someone who's been in the building and who was credited with the meat of the Juan Soto trade in 2022. So a very qualified individual now running the draft room. And I can't imagine that the Nationals were not already aligned. if you told me that like, whoa, this move like to shake up the Nationals front office has completely upended their process for the first overall pick, I would be shocked. But that said, a little bit of chaos and maybe tells you a little bit about their plans. What are you seeing in terms of any potential interruptions in that top 10 wild cards and how the Nats process affects that pick?
So for a while now, it's felt like the industry thought that the Nationals were down to prep shortstop Ethan Holliday or LSU lefty Cade Anderson for the number one overall pick. Those are two very different types of players. One is a lefty who might be in the big leagues next year, if he was, again, there's an outside shot he would just get promoted to the end of this year too. He's just that kind of ready, has that kind of combination of stuff and the arsenal and maturity to actually do that. And then you have Holliday, who has incredible upside, especially when it comes to power, but he's not going to be ready for a while. He's going to take a few years to kind of bake. And I wonder a little bit. I'm sure that, look, there's a lot of other problems with the National Assistant Organization. You know, they didn't want to exercise Dave Martinez's option, and they were kind of forced to do so. And if they weren't going to exercise it, then that was going to cause problems with Rizzo, and they were kind of done with him anyway. So I kind of get it. But I do wonder if there was some debate as to should we go with the player that we think is best long-term versus a guy who could help us out sooner, and if maybe Rizzo was the type of guy that would have gone for the longer term play, right? Also, with the Nationals not having Rizzo at the top, the odds that Seth Hernandez gets picked first overall go down dramatically, because I think he's one of the few GMs in baseball that would have picked a high school righty first overall if he thought he was good enough. So, but we don't know enough about DiBartolo to like make any like claims about what his tendencies are going to be. Mm-hmm. I think ownership wants a winner sooner rather than later. So if anything, maybe this change makes it more likely that Cade Anderson's the pick, but they're both Scott Boras clients. So it's kind of one of those, like maybe it's just a matter of a money thing or something like that. But I think that the top is pretty safe. But again, the odds of like a Seth Hernandez now dropping to the Reds or the White Sox at 9 and 10, which would be kind of wild in terms of pure talent, have gotten a lot higher since the move.
Yeah, Mike Rizzo said it best on his way out, that he, you know, felt he had a good 10-year dealing with ownership for, you know, 20 years. And they certainly are a force to be dealt with in basically every big league city. But Washington, it's very clear that there is a mandate there, and there is sort of a, you know, a mess that some, you know, the deft GMs have to deal with when it comes to navigating win now versus win later. And we will definitely, we're mere days away from seeing how this plays out and how everything gets upended. And who lands the Ethan Holliday prize after all of this? Seeing a few names who you like as potential wildcards mentioned in the comments, so I want to call that out. Is there anyone you see, not necessarily cracking the top 10, but interrupting the first round, who could, you know, interrupt that process towards the back end?
Yeah, the one is Zach Root. I don't think he gets picked above Gage Wood, right? Like, I think that between the two Arkansas arms, that Gage is going to go first. But let's assume a world where like someone in the low teens picks Gage Wood, and then you have Zach Root sitting there in the high teens. Are any of his pitches like knockout pitches? No, but he has four probably plus pitches, and he commands all of them from the left side. And I think that for a team that like just wants a surefire guy who's going to stick in the rotation, it's not like a reliever risk issue. He's been healthy throughout, and he's played in a big conference, so all the data should work out. I think that a guy that would move quickly, maybe he's never going to be a number one or number two, maybe even a mid-rotation spot is a bit much, but a really good four or five who just gets the job done and gives you another lefty, I think that a team could pop him. Another one is Josh Owens, who is getting like kind of similar to Hammond. He's getting a lot of like he's generally been ranked in like the 60s or 70s as a high school prospect. But like, again, those teams in like the very bottom of the first round who aren't going to have another shot at him later on in the draft, he's getting enough love to where maybe he's one of those underslot guys or gets picked at the bottom of the first round or gets thrown a bunch of money at him in the comp rounds. I think he's going to get picked a lot higher. This is, I mean, again, he's a top at 10 sort of prep shortstop uber athlete that can do just about anything on a baseball field if he put his mind to it and get him with enough time. So those are kind of the two names that, like, again, once those guys get picked is going to tell us a lot about how things break down, because if those guys are getting picked early, then all of a sudden everything kind of breaks down and you could see a name or two that you'd think would be in the pick in the top 15 starts falling into the 20s and kind of breaks up everyone's draft boards.
And starts falling to, of course, the Houston Astros, because they always seem to end up at like 21 or 22 or 23 making a pick, you know, getting a little bit lucky. Although Walker Janik last year, I would say they didn't have to reach and they did. Moving on, maybe they'll draft another catcher who starts throwing minor league games and immediately gets kicked out of baseball. You never know. Sometimes expect the unexpected. Look, I hate the phrase, especially the casual use of the phrase gun to your head, because I'm always like, do we really need to add gun to the head metaphors when deciding like which amateur baseball player is going to get selected? So no gun to your head. There's no gun anywhere. But if I put you under the spotlight and put the pressure on, we are now, again, coming up on 5 days away, you know, just a couple of hours plus 5 days away from the first selection in the 2025 MLB draft. Probably not Hernandez. Probably we're thinking safer. We're thinking arm. Under duress. No gun. I threw the gun away. Who are the Washington Nationals picking first overall when the clock starts?
I think they're going to pick Cade Anderson, and I probably would pick Cade Anderson as well. Just a combination of safety and upside. Like, there's real upside with this guy. He could be a front-of-the-rotation starter. Bunch of different great pitches. I think his changeup's better than it's given credit for. And, again, when you have two-plus breaking balls and then, you know, a fastball that plays up more than you would think, this is a guy who I think just has, like, the total package, whereas Holiday, I'd be a little bit skeptical going number one overall, especially where the Nationals are at, where they already have like young guys who are kind of growing into this team, where you kind of want someone who's going to help out soon. If you get Holiday, he's not going to be up for 3 or 4 years, probably, if not longer, just because he's a bit more of a raw prospect, even if the sky is the limit in terms of his potential.
And we know what happens when you rush a Holiday in the DMV area to the big leagues. You set yourself back a year. So the Baltimore Orioles currently enjoying the fruits of their labor, but maybe a year later than they wanted. Be careful what you wish for. Although two Holidays in the DMV would be sweet, I do think Anderson is probably the safer and likelier pick. All right, we will check in with everybody next week, most likely about the futures game and the draft. We're going to need to find some time because, like I said, I am going to be in Atlanta Monday, Tuesday. So we might have Eric Hoppe on Tuesday. We might have Eric Hoppe on the Monday slot. And then Robert and I go live from Atlanta on Tuesday. You'll have to wait and see, but the best way to learn what we're going to do is by relentlessly emailing us. No, it's turning on your notifications here, and then you'll get the alert first. When we are going live, we will keep you updated on our plans. Robert Murray and I will be live tomorrow afternoon, 1 o'clock Eastern time, to end the week nicely, and then you'll hear from us plenty next week, and we're going to have shorts, and we're going to have content uploaded from the game and from futures and all that good stuff. But the only way to know when it's going live is to become a follower of the channel and turn that notification bell on so you get the alerts when we are rolling live. All right, Eric, let's talk about the previous week in Minor League Baseball 2 before we sign off. Who's hot and who's not in the pro ranks? Let's start with the positive news, as we always do.
Yeah, we'll start with kind of the three risers. I tried to put in some new names here. One is the Ryan Johnson from the Angels. The Angels predictably called him up super fast to be out of the bullpen this year after making him the 74th pick in the 2024 draft at a Dallas Baptist. Threw a lot of sliders. Didn't really work as kind of a relief option. Got sent back down. Again, rushing a guy, putting him in a position where he's out of place wasn't a great idea. But I still like the arm. And last week he made one start through 9 innings and struck out 12 batters with just one hit allowed. So overall, great week from him. Glad that he's doing well after what was kind of a rushed situation over there in L.A. Then you have Owen Cassie for the Cubs. He's been on this on our list a couple times. And again, has had a bit of a roller coaster season. Sometimes some weeks he's been basically an automatic out. Sometimes he's been impossible to get out. Last week was one more of the latter in that he went 7-for-16, 4 home runs, 6 RBIs, only struck out twice against 3 walks. Again, really good week for Owen, and I could see him kind of factoring into the Cubs' plans relatively soon. Another is a guy who I really liked when he was a draft prospect in Ryan Waldschmidt. I honestly thought he was going to hit for a lot more power, and he probably should have gone a little bit higher in that draft. But the Diamondbacks ended up getting him, and again, bit of a roller coaster in terms of his pro career so far, but last week was great, 7-for-19. No home runs, but had 3 doubles, 1 triple. Walked 6 times, stole 3 bases. He's kind of one of those guys that does a lot of things physically very well. But again, just the hit tool has to play. And last week kind of gives you hope that maybe he's figuring something out.
And I will tack on, as the comments are saying, Cam Schlittler here, who Andy Martino and Aaron Boone have combined to announce is making his Major League debut tomorrow against the Seattle Mariners. Yankees-Mariners series would be a more fun time if the Yankees had any semblance of consistency on offense, pitching, defense, relief work, what have you. No matter what the facet of the game of baseball is, the Yankees have been bad at it for 3 weeks. So I'm not, you know, usually I'd be like, ooh, Yankees, Mariners, man, hopefully the lineup shows up. Now I'm like, literally, hopefully the roster shows up. Who the hell knows? But Schlittler tomorrow should be very fun for Yankee fans who are looking for something to latch onto after 3 drowning at the bottom of the ocean weeks. You have a very exciting prospect who, out of Northeastern, I don't think any of us thought, okay, he's going to be throwing 99 just a couple of years after his draft year as a middle round pick. And that's why you got to pay attention below the first round to the players that come out of non-powerhouses, because you never know. Sometimes they get tooled up and sometimes they fall into the right system. And yes, Spencer Jones is also in flames at AAA in a way that I don't think I ever expected him to look. I mean, again, not making declarative statements, I don't know what Spencer Jones is going to be, but I didn't ever expect him to look this good at any level of baseball for as long as he has this year. So shout out to Spencer Jones. I don't think we're going to see him till opening day next year, but we might see him on opening day next year. All right. What about the players who are having a tougher time this past week?
Yeah, I don't want to dwell too much on these, because again, these are just kind of small snapshots in time, and not necessarily meaning that we don't like a guy. The first one I want to mention is Ethan Salas, not because he's played or played particularly badly, but he's still out, and he's dealing with a lower back stress reaction, and that seems pretty bad for a catcher. Again, when we have those stress reactions, you just don't know how well those are going to heal up over time, and he's a guy that needed the reps. Unfortunately, he's still not back, and he's not doing baseball activities yet, so hopefully he can get back into things. But again, back injuries, especially for a guy that young, playing a position that's as physical, as tough on your body anyway, as catcher is, you never really want to see him starting to have back issues like that. The next one's Braden Montgomery. We get asked about him a lot, and he had been great, but last week he was not. Only had two hits last week and struck out a lot of times. It's kind of the thing that I circled. A lot of swing and miss last week. I'm not super worried about him long-term, but last week it felt like he had matchups where the other team knew kind of how to attack him, and it's up to him to figure out if he can adjust to that and be able to defend himself against that type of those types of pitches, or if it's going to have a really tough time making contact this year and it's going to take him a little bit longer. But I still like him quite a bit. Just wasn't particularly great weight for him. The last one's Jett Williams. Again, another guy that I really liked in his draft class, and unfortunately the Mets took him, which makes me happy, makes me unhappy. But again, one like super speedy guy, does a lot of things really well, but also and had generally been pretty good. Overall since he's been in the minor leagues. But last week, just wasn't a great week for him. Another guy who only had two hits, but we didn't like strike out as much, as more had some bad luck and wasn't like kind of hit, just didn't make enough hard contact to make the most of it. So again, I think he'll be fine, but for a guy who's a top 100 prospect, you probably expect a little more out of Jett.
Yeah, I thought he might be cracking the big leagues by now, especially given the Mets' inability to turn these middle infielders into what they're like Mauricio, Beatty. Do we know what any of those guys are? We don't. There's still a lot of uncertainty for the Mets. You can add Williams to that bucket, although obviously all of these guys still have plenty of time left on their clocks. Thank you for joining us today. Final show before the MLB draft. That begins Sunday night. You will hear from us again next week, but you got to stay tuned to learn when. And in the meantime, you can read Eric Cole's work on the Baseball Insider's feed on fansided.com and on so many sites throughout the Fansided Network. Draft coverage specifically, House that Hank built, Climbing Tails Hill, Dodgers Way, Birds Watcher probably, Puckett's Pond. I mean, if you are looking for draft work, come join us on the Fansided Network and read Eric on Sunday night. Eric, you're right. One of the best weeks of the baseball calendar. We are coming up on the trade deadline. We are coming up on the All-Star festivities. It all starts on Saturday at the Futures game. We are closer than ever to the good stuff.
Yeah, looking forward to it. Again, starting Sunday is going to be kind of a long week for us because we're going to have the draft, and as soon as the draft's over, we're going to get right into the trade rumor season. But looking forward to it. And again, this is the time of year where you kind of get the dream on a lot of guys and see what they're going to do, only for our teams to predictably disappoint us in, you know, a matter of weeks. And in the case of Adam and I, it might be sooner than that. Yeah. So it's going to be a good time.
Yeah, my team stinks. You're not going to really get it. You're not going to get anything out of me. That's the thing. Like, I think people, when your team kind of stinks, they expect you to be like, we'll be back, or like really hurt. It's like, no, I'm fine. They stink. Like, maybe they might not stink in a month. Right now they do. And you're really not going to get a rise out of me. You're not going to get me to say anything I regret. You're just going to get me to be like, yep, I agree with you. They're bad. So we'll see what happens. We will see how the week of celebration in Atlanta turns out. Again, you're going to want to subscribe if you're not subscribed to the Baseball Insiders and turn on all notifications. Watch our shorts. Watch our longer form content. I'll be at the press conferences and the media availability in Atlanta. Robert will be at the Futures game. We might even have some behind-the-scenes stuff for you with some of your favorite prospects. So join us right here. We'll keep you updated on streams. Until then, take care, everybody, and thank you for joining us or listening today.
Save big on everything for your next project when you shop at Menards. Finish up projects with GE-branded silicone sealants. Tub and tile silicone is 100% waterproof and offers same-day water readiness, making it perfect to use in kitchens and bathrooms. Shop our selection of GE sealants in-store and on Menards.com and save big. Plus, check out the weekly flyer to view all of our other great deals happening this week. Save big.